Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I have a bit of a dilemma here.
Okay.
And I don't know, should we start out with the listener commentary I got, or should we just get right into the dilemma?
Oh, well, let's get the commentary first, because I don't believe I've gotten that commentary.
Of course not, because finally somebody actually contacted me direct, as opposed to, you know, giving it to you, because you never share anything with me. You don't share pie, you don't share time off, you don't share, you know, when you take trips down to the world's largest candy store, which I guess opened this weekend. So
I didn't go yet.
I haven't either, but I had a friend that went down there, and he posed next to a big mural of the Hulk. So they did do expanding. So it's hard to believe you could fit more candy, pie, and whipped goodness in a place, but we will have to check that out one of these days. But this comes from Ron Elred, and he waved at me. Said, excellent job on the latest podcast. Kudos to you, Corey, and Daniel. And I said, thanks for, I'll pass the kudos along. And then he says, I went to college with Corey, and I apologize profoundly for that. He says, he's the one that really got me into enjoying comics. And he suggested that maybe since a couple weeks ago we did one on the top movies and TV comic book shows, how about a show on maybe the top TV comic book shows out within the last 5 years or so? Ooh. Like Gotham, Jessica Jones, things like that. And I said, Beck, you got a lot of nerve, fella. Then he says, I try to look at the books, comics, and such you guys talk about, but with the recent comic superhero interest, it would give people a glimpse into what you guys find interesting. And I have the same thing. I don't watch a lot of the current stuff. Matter of fact, I would have to probably restart Jessica Jones because I went 5 episodes in and then dropped because, you know, I spend a lot of time on the eBays. So anyways, that was kind of neat to hear from a listener.
And they can message us on Facebook. They can email us on SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com.
And then I can also talk to him directly and see if he has any embarrassing college stories he can share.
Probably.
Yeah.
And if you're looking to advertise on this here podcast, I'm going to brag for a minute, Joe.
Okay, I'm going to sit back and drink this here water.
Because we've been running an ad for Ace Blade number 4 with Danny J. Quick, who I interviewed last year on the solo podcast. And his Kickstarter was funded within 5 days. And
5 days?
A lot of that was his work, but we had something to do with it too, because it's like 2 days after the ad that he purchased dropped, he was fully funded. Went from around $450 to the $1,000 he needed. And
it was done by listeners like you.
Yep.
Thank you.
So I would like, if you've got a Kickstarter that has to do with
comics, need it to be kicked.
You could buy ads on this here podcast.
I don't believe it. How do they do that?
Well, right here. Hey there, kittens and caboodles. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. Would you like to contact the show? Would you like to say something and have it be on the show? Go ahead and give us a call at 952-856-0519 and leave a message, and we'll play it on the show. You can also email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. And if you would like to buy advertising on the Solitaire Rose Network, a growing network of podcasts that I am very excited about because, well, but they're my podcasts, you can do so. Just email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks. But the other thing that I want to brag about, Joe, pretty much for the last 4 years, every Kickstarter that we have focused on has succeeded. The 2 Case File Arkham books, the book by Carl Kessel, the Robo-Vikings book, the Ace Blade. We are a success magnet. You know why?
Why is that?
Because we are a national treasure. So if you've got a Kickstarter, you probably want to be emailing me to buy some ads.
Sure, why not?
Now, you said you have a dilemma.
Yes. And of course, you don't have to worry about it because you were selfish and had a son, whereas I was a very kind person and had daughters.
I had no choice in the matter.
I know it's I didn't either, but you take what you can get. But it's biologically proven that I am, how would you say, predisposed to not like any boy that comes sniffing around my daughters. It's
I
just
do
it's
not
just
understand that at all.
it's it it's just It's just something that they've actually studied, and they think it could be because it's like, oh, well, he's eventually going to replace me as the male figure in her life. There's always a suspicion that he's having relations with her. Quick nod to Bat Dad for that one. And it's just something that's there. So no matter what happens, I'm just predisposed to not like this particular person. However, I found out through my sources that this one particular boy actually listens to this here podcast.
Uh-oh. So
So
you can't
now
say anything mean about him.
I'm not sure if I should. Zach, yes, I found out your name, and I'll discover more about you.
Joe.
I will bring the terrible power of Homeland Security down upon thy
Joe.
head.
He's a listener.
What?
We're nice to the listeners.
That's the dilemma.
We're always nice to the listeners.
Oh, see, I just don't know what to do.
Let me run things.
There is one thing that would soothe my fevered spirits. And we'll get to that when we get to freaking.
Pizza?
But no, I had some before we started. Think so. I gotta tell you, I could never marry a woman that could outbulge me.
I don't think it's possible.
Oh no, she did. Most impressed. But that's not what we're And then we're not gonna
I had 5 days off, Joe.
always, always.
And
Did you hear Teller spoke?
yes, I did.
Yeah, in the Big Bang Theory season finale. And of course, and it's funny because everybody was, oh, Mark Hamill was on. It was so cool. Oh, it was so amazing. And I was like, I was more gobsmacked that he spoke. I mean, I know he has in the past, but I've never seen it. So to actually see him, actually utter a few words live, I was like, wow. So I was more impressed with that. But everybody else was like, oh, Mark Hamill was on there. Sorry, I was more impressed when he did Robot Chicken, but.
There were all kinds of TV news that came out over the weekend, and the good thank goodness there was, because all the comic news that came out over the weekend just made me mad at comic book fans.
Yeah.
But the TV shows were canceled and renewed and moved, and what? Let's see. Out of the shows I watch, Designated Survivor got canceled, which did not surprise me. The first season was incredibly good. The second season, they got a new showrunner who said, we're not going to do as much serialized stuff. The scripts got very dumbed down, where one of the things that I like about a political show is when they show that the problems that come before our leaders are very complicated. And in this one, it was very much the problems were complicated, but they always kind of did a hand wave at the end of the episode to make it go away. And all of the intelligence from the. It's like everybody dropped 50 IQ points from first season to second season. So I was not surprised that Designated Survivor got canceled. Anything else I watch is still on.
Well, for me though, the surprise was Lucifer, and I take the blame for that because I realized I was woefully far behind on it. But I figured I'd catch up on it on one of the streaming services, so I deleted the entire season. And next thing I know, they canceled it. So my bad. I won't do that
It's your
again.
fault.
It is. I'll take the blame, but it's not my fault.
Although I have not watched it, Again, I'm behind on even the shows I watch. I'm behind on. I have all 12 episodes of the X-Men show that was on Fox, The Gifted. I got them all on the DVR. I'm just now watching Wrestle Kingdom from January, so that's one of the reasons why I took some time off from the full-time job. Partly because Minnesota in May is beautiful, beautiful weather. Partly because I was getting very burned out. And so I watched an entire season of Archer in one sitting, Joe. last season, the Archer Noir. Yeah, I watched the whole thing in one sitting. It was glorious. Oh, there's that sound again. But had a lot of time for reading comics, which we'll talk about in our next episode. We're going to do like an all-review episode next time.
Well, that means I actually have to read something.
Yes. And take notes on it.
Yeah, it probably won't happen.
Okay.
As I say, I forgot to tell you, I'm on vacation next week.
Well, that's why we'll do an episode ahead of time.
I hate to tell you this, but as we peer back the actual veil of how things work.
Oh my God, you're
breaking
kayfabe.
I know, but see, we are approximately, this podcast here will drop after the always mentioned MSP Comic Con, which we always refer to as Spring Con.
Comic Con.
So I haven't got a chance to really, most people would be thinking, oh, this is the episode where they talk about MSP Comic Con. But that won't happen for a while because I'm going to be gone next week. And what you don't realize is now for the next 2 days, I am basically plunging and purging the house, getting all that goody stuff that people gave and sent to me. Like Granite City gave us a huge box of game cards and trading cards and things. And another guy gave me a couple boxes of various diecast vehicles. Well, I got to get all that stuff prepared. And then on Thursday, I bring it to the fairgrounds and set it all up. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday's a con. Monday, I'm gone. So this is it, fanboy. And the funny thing was, and I don't know whether to blame you, Strode, or Gmail. Let's blame Gmail.
Okay.
Just for the sake of friendship. But Corey sent me a note like 6 days ago. I'm going to be off all day Monday. Well, you know what I was doing all day Monday? What I was talking about earlier, purging the house, blah, blah, blah. So we could have had a fresh new episode, two fresh new episodes ready for you for not only for when I'm at the con, but also for when I'm on vacation. But there was no follow through. And, it was just by sheer accident that I happened to look into the spam folder. And I'm kind of thinking, why is, after all these time, you're sending me spam? Or why I figured this one was spam and all the other ones you sent me weren't.
Huh.
So, next time, follow up.
I was on
anyway,
vacation.
You probably have to use the fill-in episode, and then we'll do a review episode after that. Because what I'll do is I'll bring all those fun stuff to review with me. Actually, I may just bring all my free comic book day stuff because usually what happens is that I'll start going through it like years later, and I'm like, oh, damn, that was interesting. This was from 2013. I hope they published it. So we will get to it, but we'll still have to figure out. Corey may do a special episode, a very special episode, without me.
Does that mean Gordon Jump's going to feel me up in the back room of his bike shop again?
Yeah, it could. Or maybe you and Reginald could sit down and have a talk, heart to heart, and try to straighten him out with all these weird things about comics he thinks.
I'd rather get felled up by Gordon Jump's corpse.
I kind of figured you might. So anyways, we peeled it back. Now let's put it back and go, yeah, Corey, we're going to do that.
So I sat down and read some omnibuses.
Omnibi?
Yes.
It's good to see your ribs recovered from being assaulted by the Adamantium collection.
You hit me in the head.
Yes. Well, 18 pounds of solid comic knowledge. Sometimes you got to do it.
So instead, rather than review stuff that has come out, since Joe's not ready, we'll talk about what we would like. This is.
I don't open my omnibus. It takes the volume. It takes the value down. Plus, they look so impressive on my bookshelf as it's slowly bending and getting ready to cave away. You just don't get that with other hardcovers, folks. You need omnibus weight.
So, I thought we could delve into the world of fantasy.
It's just a fantasy.
Here we are. We're in fantasy world, Joe.
Yay.
Wow. We don't have a very big budget. This is more like the fantasy world of the Wizards of the Lost Kingdom. But if we could do any omnibus we wanted.
Ooh.
Any omnibus. Because there are some that, you know, I would like that, you know, legally will never happen.
I got one of those, too. Actually, probably a couple of those.
Yeah. And, the rights are all messed up, or the company no longer exists, or whatever. But, five omnibuses that we would like. Because one of the things I like about the omnibus is you get the complete run. Like, with the Doctor Strange omnibus, it's the complete run of Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. Or the Werewolf by Night omnibus, it's the complete series. Or the Tomb of Dracula, one of my favorite series from the 70s, is in two omnibuses. And they even have a third that's got all the black and white magazine stuff that wasn't by Gene Colan and Marv Wolfman, so I kind of ignore it. But these are five fantasy omnibuses.
And, of course, I cheated and had six.
Well, then you get to go
first.
I was sitting here
trying to figure out what to eliminate. But these I think, would be actually pretty fun. And it's possible maybe one or two of them might actually happen. And, of course, the one thing as I was looking for, as you know, because Corey can give me a quick theme of a show, and I'll figure some way to convolute it. But I looked at things like, would they do an omnibus on this, or has it already been reprinted in an epic collection? Is it something that they would think to actually put in a larger format? Has it been out already? But I did find some things that I think would be fun. And the first one up, I would like to see all the Marvel and DC crossovers in an omnibus. Starting with the amazing, Superman meets Spider-Man, or
yep.
Is it Spider-Man meets Superman? I forget who got top billing in that
Superman
first one.
Superman got top billing.
And you don't realize, again, this is my golden age of comics as a 12-year-old, and I saw ads for this, and my mind exploded. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And the only real disappointment of it was the fact that they played it off like, yeah, Superman and Spider-Man live on in the same Earth. Whereas I was more thinking like the JSA-JLA crossovers, like, oh, somehow they cross over and meet each other. But it took me a long frickin' time to find this. In this day and age, I don't even know if it's currently being published, but you could probably find, if you got hundreds of thousands of dollars, you want to buy a mint copy of it, you could do that. If you want to buy it in one of the books. But, you know, we think about all the crossovers that they've had. And, you know, there was that, and then they came out with Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, Hulk, and then an awesome one, X-Men, Teen Titans.
They did a second Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was that one I mentioned. Because the first one, Superman, Spider-Man's in there. So the original five. And then after that, the mind blurs because it was like every other month was somebody different. You know, John Byrne did, a Batman, Captain America one. And then there was a Galactus Dark Side by Byrne. And there was like a Batman Punisher, a Punisher Batman. I don't know if you want to include the DC Marvel DC versus Marvel, or maybe that should be its own, including with the Amalgam Universe. That would be maybe volume two. But just anything that was a standalone crossover. I think there was a Silver Surfer, Green Lantern, and we've blabbed on and on about those before, but it would be so cool, you know, to have the good, the bad, and the ugly all in one bound. I think was there? There was two Batman Punishers.
Yes.
And one of them was that was when Batman had his back broken. So there Azrael was replaced. I mean, had his big armored Batman thing.
Yes.
So maybe a little discussion about what's going on and what happened, and have them all. I don't think you need to include, although you could if you really want to make it complete, the awesome JSA Avengers, JLA Avengers, that was done by Prez and Buzak. But, you know, again, I don't know how big you can make an omnibus before it gets to a point where it collapses under its own weight. That Marvel Secret Wars 2, I really worry about. One of these days I'm going to open that thing, it's just going to implode.
Well, the New Gods is over 1,500 pages.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. That's actually sitting on top of some of my omnibus. I figure, you know, I got to get that weight going. But, you know, I figure you do that, the original crossovers, and then maybe do the DC versus Marvel with the complete amalgam universe. And that, because that would probably make for a good two-volume set of Omnibody. What would be your, one of your choices, Mr. Strode?
Well, one of the things about your choice is Marvel and DC for a while did co-publish the crossover classics in four volumes.
Yeah,
and I knew that
mostly out of print.
Yeah, I knew that would not last, so I snatched those up as soon as I could. And the DC versus Marvel is out of print. The JLA Avengers is out of print. And last I looked, DC versus Marvel, which can I be blunt, Joe?
It doesn't hold up well.
It's not a good story at all. It's not a good story at all. It was very much an event and not a really good story. That thing's going for a lot of money on the Amazon and the eBays.
Yeah. That's why you need to like set some things up, because at the time, the first fight, Spider-Man was a clone. You know, which is why when Superboy makes a comment about being a clone, Spider-Man reacts the way he did. Well, if you didn't know, and I've complained about this on other books, if you don't know where in the continuity this fits, a lot of it just like goes right over your head. But hey, you know, I've got Avengers the Crossing, so it isn't necessarily a prerequisite for this, but to get the amalgams in a nice format like that, I think it would be worth it.
And I think you'd need two omnibuses, and I think, you know, do them all. Have DC publish one and Marvel publish one, you know, however that works. Sadly, I don't think it'll happen, but we can hope. We can hope.
That's the point. And who knows, you know, we've had Kickstarters go. We've had TV shows canceled. You know, people are listening. Maybe somebody might decide, you know, hey, making money is more important than ego.
Well, the next one I have is one that I would think would be possible, but I haven't heard any rumblings of it, and that is Howard Chaykin's American Flag. When he was working for First, he did, I think, the first 24 issues, and then other people did the next up to issue 50. Then he came back and did another 12 issues. So taking those 36 comics and putting them in one volume, I would love to have that.
In the graphic novel Southern Comfort, too, you could, you know, yep, that could round it out.
Well, you could throw in the two times squared graphic novels, because they were kind of part of it, but kind of not. It'd also be nice to get those back into print, because Chaykin often talks about how those were some of his favorite things to work on. But the thing about American Flag was it was a series set about 30, 40 years in the future, where America was kind of a corporation rather than a country. And if you go back and read it, you're going to think, oh, you know, this is a really modern-looking book. It has a lot of the overlapping story. The art style is very modern. And this book came out in 1983. Every time they talk about, you know, the comics that drove the medium forward, they mention Maus, Watchmen, and Dark Knight. I'm always shocked they don't mention American Flag, because people stole from that constantly. They stole the how he would use TV screens to give exposition, how there wasn't narration boxes, the jump cuts, which no one had done before. The idea of switching from scene to scene always had a meanwhile, to the point where that was a cliche. He didn't do that. He would draw differently to give you that sort of a cinematic version of a jump cut. The story was complex. The characters were very much in that Chaykin, cynical, smartass hero style. And it had Raoul the Cat, one of my favorite characters in any comic ever. An intelligent cat with robot hands. But it was just a brilliant comic. I know Image has put out the first, I think, either 6 or 12 issues in a trade paperback. But we need the whole thing, because it was very complex and very... You couldn't just read one issue and know what was going on. Chaykin demanded a lot from the reader. And it was one of those where I would read it month to month, and then every so often I'd gather up all the issues and read them in a row. And you'd see just how brilliant he would set a seed in one issue and it wouldn't pay off for another 6. Or things in the background would move to the foreground and then move back to the background and move forward. It was a different style of storytelling that now most comic creators use. And Chaykin owns the rights to it, so I don't see why he wouldn't do it. Joe, next time you see Howard Chaykin, give him a chicken sandwich and tell him we want an omnibus.
He'll be at that Minnesota Fan Fusion in August, so maybe I will, if I can get the weekend off, but that's a different subject. My next choice, I guess I will narrow it down to 5, because this one, as I think about it, would be kind of it could be a 2-volume set or more, depending on what they come up with. And you could do it for DC, but I kind of lean towards Marvel on this one. I call it the unprintables and the rarities. The unprintable Marvels would be things that we've talked about in the past. The first Death's Head, is in a Transformer comic book. Never going to be reprinted. We talked about the Marvel 2-in-1, where Thing meets Doc Savage. We've talked about things like Logan's Run. Marvel team-up with Not Ready for Primetime Players. Just anything that's odd like that, you've got your run of Marvel Secret Wars 2, and, well, we couldn't publish the Micronauts, but here's the crossover, and things like that. I'm looking more for, like, I guess the regular Marvel Universe, where you just, when they did the Essentials or the Epics or whatever, they just couldn't publish it in there. The rarities one would be more items that were fairly rare and just nobody ever saw. I'm thinking, like, they had these Gumball comics in 1968 where they were about the size of maybe half a postage stamp. And you see them on the eBays all the time. They run anywhere from $50 to $200, depending on which one they were. I'd love to see them and see what was in them. I'm thinking giveaways. I mean, there were... In the, I think it was 80s, the big one was the Dallas Cowboys meets the X-Men and the Hulk. It was given away in an ad for the, I think, was it the Houston Herald or Dallas Tribune or whatever it is. But it was only available then. And, of course, trying to find it was crazy. And, of course, it had the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, who were, you know, very big right then. We've talked in the past about the child abuse issues prevention, where like Spider-Man was in them. AIM toothpaste had a Spider-Man Green Goblin. You know, those type of things that you either got to find and hope you can find, or pay megabucks in the back issue, or maybe find a beat up copy of it. I'd even toss in the Hostess ads. I'm telling you, if I was Hostess, you know, we talked about it, went out of business, came back, I'd got a hold of Marvel DC and say, hey, let's reprint these things in, like, just a fun promo type comic thing and give them away for every box you buy or sell it in comic stores. But these are things that they're part of the comic history. Even again, the Death's Head, there's an issue where he went after Doctor Who because in Transformers, Death's Head was as tall and as big as the Transformers. And then one of the doctors used a compression Ray that he apparently stole from the master, shrunk Death's Head down to human size. And then, meantime, somebody put a hit out on the doctor. Well, in Death's Head comic himself, he tried to collect on it. I think at that time it was the Eighth Doctor. The Seventh Doctor, Sylvester McCoy. And, you know, these are things you can pick up the run, the incomplete Death's Head, but that's the issue they cannot reprint because, you know, Doctor Who's in it and they don't own the rights to it. So I would like to see that type of omnibus. I would imagine it would be so expensive, but I think it would be a lot of fun just not only for some of the rarities, but just to be able to have these things in a permanent format. So when I go to read my Marvel Secret Wars 2 omnibus, I can put that 85-pound monstrosity down and pick up the Unprintables one and then read the Micronauts crossover and then put it down and so on and so on. You know, heck, you could even... Well, anyways, that's kind of some of the things that I'd like to see in an omnibus form. And, it, you know, with the cost to do the omnibus, it might even make it economically viable.
Of course, when you mentioned, you know, the Unprintables and stuff for DC... See, I don't have this on my list because I didn't think of it. Wouldn't it be cool if DC came out with a omnibus of canceled comics cavalcade?
Oh, look, I'm drooling already. That would be something I would buy because those issues would be so impossible to pick up. And I think we even talked about it in the past, a Foom omnibus. Again, the problem is because Foom had a lot to talk about the Micronauts and this and that and all these other licensed products that they could probably never do it. But it would be fun for us
old timers who remember this type of stuff.
The next book that I had on my list was one that you've mentioned a couple of times now, and that is The Micronauts. Marvel's Micronauts, the first 12 issues by Michael Golden.
Oh.
I was of the age where I had the Micronaut toys. And I remember when the comic came out, it was like, that's not how it's done in the toys. Because, you know, that was back when you were young enough that you read everything on the back of the toy and bought.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the comic came out, it's like, that's not right. That's not right.
That's not right.
By the fifth issue, I no longer paid any attention to the background they gave on the Mego toys. The Marvel version is much cooler. And, man, that art by Michael Golden, still to this day, beautiful.
You know, the problem is with the comic books, and I have the comic books, it's on newsprint,
yes,
and it doesn't hold up well.
It looks bad.
It does.
And you put that on the... You know, you do a good print job on the omnibus paper, that Michael Golden art will blow you out of the water. And it's a shame there's so much really good Michael Golden stuff out there that just hasn't been reprinted. Especially when you think about all the artists who, when you talk to them, they will say that Michael Golden is their inspiration. Angel Medina often talks about the issue of Doctor Strange that Michael Golden drew that he buys. Every time he goes to a convention, he just buys that issue.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun run.
Buzz will go on and on and on if you let him about how much he loves Michael Golden. A lot of the Image Boys said that they were inspired by Michael Golden. But those Micronauts issues. Then you had Pat Broderick take over, who did a really... His style was not much different from Golden in those days. And all the way up through, I would say, to the end of the Gil Kane run, just reprint all of the Bill Mantlo stuff. Because once it went to a different writer, it wasn't the same. But, man, you're not going to get a reprint of that from IDW because they don't have the rights to the Marvel characters. It was in the Marvel Universe. But if they, you know, sit down, work out an agreement... Do a Micronauts, do a ROM. ROM you'd need two because it went 75 issues. Joe?
Well, you took the one I was thinking about because I had ROM down as well. Because, I mean, you know, speaking of Bill Mantlo, another fun run I've blabbed on and on about how Rom, I remember that first issue, I was walking into Shinders and I saw Rom number one. And my recollection is that there were no house ads for this until after number one published, because I had no idea what it was. I mean, I knew the Micronauts were coming. I knew Shogun Warriors were coming. Again, another one that would be fun, Shogun Warriors. And I'm like, well, I should pick it up. It's a Marvel book. And, you know, I wasn't quite sure it would appear or how it dealt with in the Marvel Universe until Rom went into that house that Doctor Strange fought. And then you realize, okay, yeah, it's part of the Marvel Universe. It started out small, his own little private war. And then eventually the entire Marvel Universe got sucked into it. And even towards the end, I mean, I loved Sal Buscema's art. And although the change to Ditko was stark, it still worked. I think about issue 59 is when that happened. And it ran through. I think Broderick did annual number one as well. But, yeah, there were 75 issues. There were four annuals. There was a crossover with Power Man Iron Fist, which was weird because you were always told, well, Rom probably won't appear anywhere else in the Marvel Universe, and then he does. And it was a key point, too, because that's how they were able to get Rom off-planet. And I suppose if you want, throw in the episode where he comes back for Rick Jones' wedding. I guess Marvel got in a little hot water for that, but I think this would be a fun run. I really thought there's a Facebook page for people who appreciate Rom, and they were really pushing hard to have Marvel reprint Rom somehow as a benefit for Bill Mantlo. And of course, it never happened. And I did, you know, I do kind of follow along Rom in the IDW universe, and they did kind of an interesting thing where they said, you know, some of the technology that Rom's using is Transformer based. So, you know, the whole thing coming up with the Unicron, which we talked about in the Free Comic Book Day issue, Rom was part of that as well. So, you know, they're doing interesting things with it, but it, you know, to sound like an old fart, it's not my Rom, and it's not something I you know, I tried it. Not my cup of tea. I'm not really going to complain about it. But I would love to. I would buy an omnibus on this ROM as well. Again, same thing I said about the Micronauts. This is all published in newsprints. It doesn't hold up well, even if you keep your issues in awesome shape like mine are. Shogun Warrior might be a little tougher sell because it wasn't as long. But maybe combine it with Godzilla. You know, what the heck? We got an essential on it. Why not do Omnibus? Corey?
The next one I have is one that would be a lot like the Monster Buses that they put out last summer. And that is 70s Marvel Horror. For a short time in the 70s, horror was selling very, very well. And Marvel had some original horror anthology comics. Fear, Tower of Shadows, and then when the sales dropped, they started putting in reprints, and then they eventually just started just reprinting all the 50s horror stuff. But you had Gene Colan doing stuff, you had Don Heck doing stuff, and reading those stories, because when I read Don Heck's superhero stuff, it was kind of a, everything looks kind of dull. I was very used to the Kirby stuff, but when I read the Don Heck horror stuff, it was like, oh, wow, he's really good when he's drawing superheroes. Then you had the Marvel magazines, which were also horror anthologies and had a lot of, you know, new stories in them. Now, a lot of those horror comics, well, a lot of the 70s black and white magazines, you know, they reprinted the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. They've reprinted Dracula Lives. But there's all these 1, 2, 3-shot stories out there. Put them in one big omnibus. Here's 70s Marvel Horror. And if there's enough room, you could put in the short-run series, such as Brother Voodoo, or It the Living Colossus, or Mordred the Mystic. Get a good 1,000 pages, just 70s Marvel Horror. And I would be on that like Oprah on a canned ham.
She loves her canned hams.
Joe, what's next on your list?
Before I get any farther, I was going to... Did you know there's a omnibuscollector.com?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, the omnibuscollector.com, and he does a similar thing where he puts wish lists and reading lists and things like that. So he actually hasn't posted for a while, but if you want to go check it out, it's kind of fun because he's kind of doing the same thing we did. I found it because I was... One of the things... This is kind of a tie, and I'm going to cheat because there are two omnibus runs I really, really, really want. And they're both Marvel, and I'm just going to say them. I want Moon Knight. I want Defenders. Two totally separate characters, but I think, for like you said, Corey, Moon Knight had a lot of different appearances before he had his first series. Defenders, again, they've done Essentials. I think they've done Epic. Yep. They've reprinted the things like that. I would like it in an omnibus form because the art was a lot of fun. It'd be cool to have the stories there. Throw in a couple extras. I don't know if there's anything around. I don't know how far into the Defenders you want to go. Do you want to do the whole thing? You want to get up to the miniseries? Because there have been a couple miniseries. I think Eric Larson did one that was a lot of fun. And they did Secret Defenders, which was hit or miss. Thanos was in it. Moon Knight, same thing. Some of those early appearances and one-shots, nobody... And then I just started thinking about, like, you know, which characters would deserve them. You know, Black Widow, that would be kind of fun. Inhumans, that would be cool. So, you know, there's always... And I'm even thinking DC. DC would be a little tougher because of the whole New 52 cut. It's kind of like, well, I'm not necessarily interested in a New 52 omnibus of those characters, but you start taking some of the classic stuff, like you talked at the top of the podcast about the New Gods. That would be a lot of fun, or the canceled comic Cavalcade. So just a couple of different properties that I think would be kind of fun.
I'm looking over. I hadn't gone to Omnibus Collector for a while. Where I get my omnibus news is actually the Marvel Masterworks page. And they work with Marvel on, okay, here's the Masterworks that are coming out. They've actually helped find better sources for some of the material. And that's MarvelMasterworks.com. But if you look under their other hardcovers, click on that. It's got the DC Archives, the DC hardcovers, Marvel Oversize hardcovers. They've also got a list of all of the essentials there. But they've got, you know, the Oversize hardcovers and the omnibuses.
Right.
And they have news about the omnibuses that are coming out. The other good thing about it is if the omnibus is in print or the Oversize hardcover is in print, they have a link to where you can get it on, let's see, is it Amazon? I'm going to hit the link. Yep. They've got links to Amazon or other websites that are selling them. So there's that. The next one I have on my list is another one that I know will not ever see print, but it should. One of my favorite DC series from the 80s was Infinity Inc. And the series was, these are the children of the original Justice Society. It had Roy Thomas, it had Jerry Ordway did some stuff, and then this unknown artist, Todd McFarlane.
It's got to be a pseudonym. Yeah. I don't believe that's a real name.
It ran 52 issues. It had some crossovers with other books. It had some annuals. It was another one of these books that Crisis pretty much destroyed it, and I really hated the ending. I could not have hated the ending enough. But the idea was fun. It was well put together. The characters, some of the characters still live on if you're a Sandman fan. But man, for the first 30, 35 issues, it was one of my favorite superhero books from the 80s. And it's not been reprinted, which kind of shocks me because they've reprinted God knows everything else. You know, Secret Society of Supervillains got two hardcover reprints. Come on, man. Come on, man.
Come on. Come on.
This is early Todd McFarlane art. Why isn't it in print?
Come on.
And the first 12 issues was a continued story about the Justice Society turning evil and their kids having to stop them. And it was one of those where I couldn't come out fast enough for me. I was just starting to learn about DC. Roy Thomas, he knows his past and can weave it into new stories, whereas a lot of other writers who try to mine the past just, alright, here's a story we did and we're going to reuse the villain. He would take the ideas from it and kind of mold them like Play-Doh and stretch them in new ways. And Infinity Incorporated was kind of the perfect version of that. I would buy this at almost full price. Not full price, because I don't buy anything at full price when it comes to comics, but almost full price. I want it that bad, Joe. What's next on your list?
Well, I decided to give DC a little love.
Well, it's about time.
Although, and you know, I did think of, I was trying to think of outside the box, but a lot of the other properties that I would think of, like John Sable or Tales of the Bean World, or, you know, other things like Mage isn't finished yet, but I definitely want a Mage omnibus. You hearing me? You talking to me, Wagner? Don't make me hunt you down, because I will. I've been reading Mage since I was 12. And I want an omnibus of all of it.
You were 12 in 1985?
I remember buying a 1 through 6 of Mage in a pack. And
because it started in 85.
I didn't realize how hot. Well, let's see. Yeah, that would be. Yeah, I was probably. Yeah, that would be about right.
No, you were around 20 in
1985. I ain't doing the math, Strode. All I'm going to say is that my next one is out of print, which is annoying as hell because I really want to read it, and I want an omnibus of it. And if I don't, there's going to be a crisis on Infinite's Earths. I want all the crossovers that pertain to the story. I've talked about it before where in the middle of crisis, it kind of breaks down because they it's like they didn't really know where they were going. And it's like Blue Devil is talking, blah, 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 blah. And then he goes off into his book. And some of the other guys go off into their books. And, you know, the crisis is percolating, but it's not percolating enough where it's in everybody's forefront. And it really doesn't get going until after the Flash dies and after Supergirl dies. And then it really, when the villains make their move, it really starts moving again. But to have an omnibus, and I have the Absolute, of Crisis on Infinite Earths with all the pertinent crossovers would just be fantastic. And it's fun to read some of the stuff in the background because back then DC was still pretty much their own fiefdom. And so when they were coming up with Crisis, not everybody wanted to be involved with it. And if they didn't want to be involved with it, they didn't have to be involved with it. And then when they realized how big it was, then you had what we called the Red Skies Crisis. This is a crisis team up. Well, why? Because they, instead of making Blue Sky, they made Red Sky. And the action in the book had nothing to do with what was going on. But, you could just even start out with, you know, you don't necessarily have to run the entire Titan book where we see the first appearance of the Monitor. But you could, what was the book where we actually saw the Monitor?
GI Combat.
Yep. Republish that one. Or if it's just, you know, just the little hits and bits coming up to Crisis. Because we knew something was coming years before it actually hit. This may actually end up having to be, I don't know how this would work. Would it be better to have the stories tie into each other? Or would you do it like they did in the Infinite Gauntlet, where here's the main story, Silver Surfer, Thanos Quest, Silver Surfer, Gauntlet, and then here are the books that tied into it. I don't know, the way, you know, DC was pretty disjointed back then, so not all the crossovers work. How far into Swamp Thing do you want to go? Because Alan Moore wove Crisis brilliantly, not only into the one-shot book, that he put in Saga of the Swamp Thing. I mean, you remember where he says, Luther, even the name inspires power. You know, as the Swamp Thing's looking up at Luther. And you don't get that sense of power in any other Crisis book. Yeah, but then he goes on, and then he culminates in issue 50. Does that deserve to be part of the Crisis? Because they're saying that actually had something to do with it. It just so happened it was going on at the same time. I don't care. Make 5 volumes of it. The point is, I'd like to have it all in one. And I don't know, Corey, what do you think? Do you include the guys who just put Red Skies on, or just let them just say, you know, these guys were part of it, but all they did was put Red Skies on?
Well, they are putting out a book that has all of the Crisis tie-ins up to Crisis issue 9. So I'm wondering if they're going to do 2. It's in the new previews. So you might want to look through your DC previews.
Well, I'll have to wait till it's your podcast. Oh, hell with it. Pause the podcast. I'm going to look it up. Oh, yeah, that's going on the list.
And while Joe was looking at that, I came up with my last one. When Conan comes back to Marvel, I want an omnibus of the Conan series from the 70s.
Well, you'll have to put the Red Sonja appearances and maybe Elric in the Unprintables.
Well, they could also, you know, negotiate to preprint those, you know, in this format, because I know that they've reprinted the Doc Savage 2-in-1 story in Marvel Unlimited. So they might have just sat down and said, hey, we'll give you this much to reprint that. And the Elric, I know that has been reprinted a few times, so it may have been that Moorcock gave, you know, here, you can reprint this, you know, do what you want. Because I've read that story in reprint volumes before. But up until issue 115, Roy Thomas was very meticulous about making sure that it fit the timeline. He would have, you know, stories that he created until, oh, here's a Robert E. Howard story. We're going to adapt that so that it fits in the timeline. When he got to the Belit stuff, in that, there were only a couple of stories, but it supposedly lasted over 4 years. So he did 4 years of stories leading up to issue 100. Roy was doing it in real time until he left. Then after he left, the creators afterward just did Conan stories, which annoyed the hell out of me and made me drop the book. And now when I go back, they're not good. Even if you're a decent creator, other than the Buscema art, the stories just aren't good because they're just random. Whereas Roy Thomas was very meticulous about making sure that they fit into the timeline. So it would probably take about 3 omnibuses to reprint all of that stuff, not counting Savage Sword, which
could
be
its own omnibus. Yeah.
And even if Roy said, okay, why don't we do it? We'll drop in the Savage Sword stories that take place during this. But man, those early ones by Barry Windsor Smith. And then you had Buscema come on, and Buscema loved drawing Conan, and it showed. On a lot of other stuff, he just did layouts or thumbnails. But on Conan, because he loved the fact that he didn't have to draw cars and buildings and superheroes, and he could draw horses, and he could draw figures, and he loved doing it, and it always showed in the art because his art was always one step up of the other stuff he was doing at the time. So the last of the omnibuses that I want to see, Marvel, get right on that when your Conan rights show up in January. And that's my last one. Joe, was that your last one?
I'm looking through. I can see I'm going to spend a lot of time on this Marvel Masterworks thing because, you know, they just got oodles of fun stuff here.
Yeah, it's a great website. I use it a lot.
You know, What If Omnibus would be kind of fun. And again, you got the Conan issue, which I suppose is unprintable, but would be printable now once they have the rights back. And I was just looking at some of the they had like the top 25 hardcovers that are out of print. And, you know, there was the Monsters the Captain Marvel Society of Monsters, or what was it called? I borrowed
Monster
the hard paper.
Society of Evil.
Oh, I would love that in a omnibus form. You know, I have the one Corey borrowed to me, which ironically he bought from me. I have it very safe because one of these days when I can just sit down and read it, I will. But and for a while they actually talked about reprinting it, and I was hoping they would do it, but then I guess lack of sales they decided to let it go. But there's just a lot of different stuff there. And if you've got something you think we overlooked, and you think how could they have been so stupid to not include that, you know what to do. You got a lot of nerve, buddy. No, I mean contact us.
You know who does? You know who has contacted us, Joe?
Oh, I'm sorry. I told him I wouldn't, you know, since the incident.
These guys, our sponsors.
Oh, phew.
That's right. Here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads. And our first sponsor is me. That's right. Your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
I thought it was something else, but no, our sponsors, definitely.
Well, if you're looking for something else, we do other podcasts, you know.
We do?
Yeah, here's the news about them.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then, over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that?
And as we've gotten all the plugs out of the way, we now ask Joe the most important question of the day. Joe?
Yes, I did save my bikini zone.
No.
Oh. Why am I red-faced?
What's going on the eBays?
Nothing. What? Actually, I should say, well, we're gonna peel back kayfabe again. Ready? Here it goes. Oh, God, that's going to leave a mark.
That stings. Don't put any rubbing alcohol on it.
The week that we're recording this, I basically was purging my eBay of things that I will be bringing or have brought, by this past tense, future tense is tough, to SpringCon, or is it MSP Comic Con 2018? So I've taken about 300 things off the eBays, including the majority of the graphic novels and things like that. And I warned you guys I'd be doing this. And being that by the time this here podcast drops, I will be on the North Shore of Minnesota. I will not be putting much back on the eBays. Matter of fact, you may actually go to my eBay site, Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, and see that I'm on vacation. So by the time the next podcast drops, which will be Memorial Day, and I'm not sure if I'll be around that day, so we might have to record on the Tuesday afterwards, I'll be starting to rebuild the eBays. And this is something I do every year. You know, kind of, even now as I was going through, I discovered things that when I originally put it on eBay, I was the only person with it. And so I priced it at what I thought was fair. Well, now there's somebody doing the same game I am, pricing it just a little bit beneath me. So that way they have, when you do the lowest first plus shipping, they come up in the search first. So I'll be repricing stuff.
How dare they?
Oh, doing my own sneaky things against me. There's a podcast in that somewhere. Anyways, I've still got tons of stuff to put on the eBay. So as of now, for the next couple of weeks, you know, you can see what's there. There probably won't be a lot of changes except for things that sell. If I get a chance to put things on, which I know I'm not going to, I will. But probably starting June, by the time you hear two podcasts from now, is when I'll start reinvigorating things. I got a lot of neat consignments where people brought me stuff that I can put on the eBays. I've been digging through my own. Matter of fact, some of the things I have, they sold so quickly, I was going to kind of brag about them, but I didn't get a chance to. Like, I had a Ms. Marvel 19 from 1979. And for a... Hang on a second. No, God damn it. I'm sorry. I don't have a shiny new dime, but I have a fairly tainted one. Corey, what is significant about Ms. Marvel 19, Volume 1 in 1979?
Oh, gosh. Well, I know it was the last of her original costume.
Yes, because it's ripped. And a nice boob shot, too.
It was not an appearance of Rogue. I know that.
Ronan was in it.
I don't know.
Was some other clown wearing the same, if not similar costume?
The original Captain Marvel met with her for the first time.
Yeah. Although I thought they met before she was Ms. Marvel.
Yes, but this was the first time when it was Captain Marvel meets Ms. Marvel.
Yep, pretty pricey, and it's gone. I had the first appearance of Machine Man back then, X-15 from 2001 Space Oddity. Probably the only issue that's got some serious heat behind it.
Which is a shame, it's a cool series.
And again, talking about, I don't know if Marvel could reprint this or not.
No.
But this be one of those, again, this is one of those rarities. It's a significant issue, and the character is around. So again, go to my rarities graphic novel in Fantasyland and check it out. I also sold a Swamp Thing 50, which I was just blabbing on about, whether or not that's part of the crisis or not. A couple things that are out of print, like I had a Mars Attacks graphic novel from Topps, 1994, that sold. And it's not all big expensive things. I mean, I ended up selling a copy of Ragnarok number 9 from IDW. For some reason, I got like two copies of it. So sold one, kept one. That's the one that Walt Simonson's, what he was doing. I don't know if it's done or just waiting to be more done. So anyways, enjoy a couple weeks. Pick through what's there on eBay's. And if you see something you're interested in, feel free to send me an offer. I've been taking offers way below half price, just because, you know, these are things I'm trying to sell. They're, you know, hey, just ask my wife. They're better off in your basement than mine. Plus, if I know you're a listener of this here podcast, I always like to include a little extra something, or I may accept that you want that $1,000 signed by Richard Corbin and Harlan Ellison hardcover of Boy and His Dog for $100. Well, I'm not saying I'll do it, but if you listen to this here podcast, I'll think about it.
Well, and after Joe talks about what's going on the eBays, we get to my favorite part of the show, where I
bathroom break.
No, where I sit on the deck with a glass of bourbon and read comics.
Oh, I thought you yelled at the kids, stay off my lawn.
No, I gave them my lawn. They can have it as long as they mow it. I don't care.
That's very generous.
No, no, no. It's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I am bummed that as we record this here podcast, words percolating through the internet that Margot Kidder passed away from the original Superman movies way back in the 70s. Just one of those, you know, she's had a tough time, and it's just sad to hear, passing away. And how dare these stars pass away on us? They should live forever like Bob Hope. Keep hope alive. So, just a little sad on that. I'm gonna talk about when we get to geeking. So that's pretty much it. Other than that, I don't have a lot of freaking, because like I said, I'm doing what I'm doing. I love doing. I'm digging through my house looking for hidden gems and things I've forgotten about. But lest I make this freaking too much geeking, Corey, what are you freaking on?
I also had the Margot Kidder thing. One of the things everybody's talking about, oh, she was Lois Lane, she was Lois Lane, she was Lois Lane. One of the reasons that I'm a little, one of the things I want to add to that is she was very open about the fact that she struggled with bipolar disorder. And there were times when her life was completely out of control. And she was able to, with medication and psychological help, kind of bring her life back together. And, you know, she lived to be 69, which when Superman came out, I would have went, wow, she's old. Now, it's like, that's not that old. But it's sad that she really, after she came out as saying she was bipolar, you didn't see her get a lot of work in Hollywood, which was a shame, because other than Lois Lane, she did some great movies. I popped online a few times over the weekend, and comic fans, one of the things that I've kind of been saying lately is I don't want to be a part of any fandom, because every fandom seems to turn to crap. And this weekend, we actually had people who, quote, are fans, unquote, I don't think they're fans, I think they're just assholes, threatening comic shop employees, death threats, because their shop owner said, I'm not going to carry this book because the creator is kind of an internet
Nazi
troublemaker. Look, shops can say, I'm not going to carry this book. You could get it somewhere else. One of the shops where the employees were threatened, actually, when someone asked, they said, no, we're not going to carry this book, but we do know that these other shops are carrying it. Dude, the comics shops don't have to carry what they don't want. Joe talks all the time about how Hot Comics St. Paul, before he bought it, how many Iron Man did they put on the shelf, Joe?
Zero.
Why?
I don't like Iron Man.
See? If you want a book bad enough, especially one of the things that I want to bring up. This book was a huge kind of an Indiegogo thing. Not a Kickstarter, an Indiegogo. And
okay, I'm ignorant. What's an Indiegogo?
Indiegogo is like Kickstarter, except you don't have to reach the goal.
Oh, okay.
And I've talked to a lot of shop owners who, if something does well on Kickstarter, they're not going to carry it in their shop for a simple reason. Everybody who wanted it contributed to the Kickstarter. Brian Hibbs, who does the Tilting at Windmills over on The Beat, probably the best news blog on comics on the web, he talks constantly about how in the early days of Kickstarter, oh, wow, this book got a lot of people buying it on Kickstarter. So he'd get it in the shop, and he couldn't sell it, couldn't give it away. And he stuck eating the product because everybody who wanted it bought it on Kickstarter. So, everybody needs to calm down. Everybody needs to calm down. Do not bring the political bullshit that is infested the rest of the world into comics. Oh, the comics are, you know, they're not for conservatives. They're not for this. They're not for that. You know what? If a shop doesn't carry a book you want, go to another shop. It's not that hard. There are all sorts of shops, and you can buy the stuff online. And the book that everybody's throwing a fit about, the artist is selling it directly. Buy it from him. He'll get more of the proceeds. There are times I just don't want to be around people anymore.
I wondered, and you get another wall of omnibuses up in the Strode compound to keep you protected from them, and if the powers that be listen to this here podcast.
And one of the things I also want to point out is, ladies and gentlemen, if you are publishing a comic and you are making a list of the stores that do not carry your comic and giving it to your fans and calling the people who run those shops names and insulting them and, you know, saying, go get them, you're really slitting your throat. Comics is a small industry. And if you're telling people to harass shops, Joe, if you heard that a creator was harassing shops when you owned a shop, would you carry their stuff?
Probably not.
It's a terrible business strategy. If you're out there causing trouble, insulting people, it's a small industry, and people are going to go, I don't want to deal with that. You know, there are comic creators who are out there stomping around, causing trouble, you know, yelling names at other creators. Guess what? Their books are not showing up in shops. Companies are saying they don't want to work with them. There are people who have said things online, and they haven't even sent samples to Marvel or DC, and the editors at Marvel and DC have seen the stuff they've said, have read over what they do, and said, yeah, I don't want to deal with that. Not because of their political beliefs, but because this person does not play well with others. It's a collaborative medium. If you're going to go it alone, that's fine. But if you want to get distributed, if you want to work with other publishers, if you want to do collaborative stuff, you better kind of be nice and not be an asshole. Because there's a long list of talented people who aren't going to be able to get work because they're such a pain in the ass to work with. Don't be those people. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Well, I sent you a picture of it. I got all my essentials in order. So I'm ready to start filling in the holes. I went with a list on Wikipedia of ones that were published. And it's interesting because I'm looking on the when you talk about the Marvel Masterworks or Marvel Masterworks. MarvelEssentials.com is where I'm at. And it's part of the Marvel Masterworks resource page. But they have a list of the graphic novels or the essentials as well. Although they don't. You know, I'm looking like at they don't even have Defenders on their list. They should. And then they have like, Doctor Strange. They only have volumes 1 and 2. And I happen to know I have 4 volumes of Doctor Strange Essentials. So I think I'm going to stick with the Wikipedia. But I did write down the ones that I don't have. There are some that I know I've had that I sold off, like I sold the Conan 1 year ago. I do have the Godzilla one. I'm surprised I don't have the Killraven one. I thought for sure I picked that up.
Oh,
and it's possible.
Don't. That Killraven one, the printing on it is terrible.
All right.
And the reason for that is the graphic novel, they didn't have the original line art.
Mm.
So, you know, it was in color. They basically just photocopied it. Meanwhile, P. Craig Russell's like, you know, you could borrow the line art from me. I have it. But they didn't. Instead, yes, I know it's going to cost a lot more, but the Marvel Masterwork is going to have all of the Killraven stuff in it.
Or better yet, Omnibus.
No, there's not enough for an Omnibus. So basically, the Killraven Masterwork is your Omnibus. It's the biggest Masterwork ever.
We could have a, maybe they call them a minibus when there's not enough. It's kind of like when Night Nurse was going crazy because the prices were going nuts. Also in the book that was commanding $10 was going for over $100. And I suggested to Marvel, I said, you know, you should do a, they were doing like the $4 throwaway Death of Superman book to keep people going. I said, just do a quick book like that. Call it the non-essential night nurse or semi-essential. I said, you're going to, the guys who are want to know about this book because it's hot right now and people are buying it and you're not going to spend a bunch. You can just print it to order. And he was like, that doesn't make sense. I go, yeah, I know. That's why I sold a ton and a half of Death of Superman for $5. Oh, tell you, there's nothing worse than somebody in power being an idiot. But so anyways, I got my essentials ready. I sometimes when I'm at work, which I'm not going to be for 2 weeks, I sit back and I'll listen to my iPod or I'll turn on YouTube's. I happen to put on something and I just started watching. Corey, have you ever seen Bat Dad?
No, I have not. I have heard
of it. Oh, my God. I laughed till I couldn't see straight. Bat Dad is just some. Why didn't I think of this stuff? He puts on a Batman mask and he's doing it kind of in a. As he's staring at the camera and the action's behind him and he's going, hey, Jen, his wife, save some of that chocolate sauce in the Batcave for later. We'll have relations. And then, of course, you can go into the inappropriate one where the kids, you know, it is pretty cool. You know, these kids swear. It's like the one that, hey, what are you doing? I'm waking a figure. Why does he have three legs? That's his penis. Some would say penises are inappropriate. Penises are appropriate. Ask Siri. What? Go ask Siri if penises are appropriate. And then it goes, bing. Penises are appropriate. I'm not sure what if you're asking for. If you'd like, I will search the web for penises are appropriate. No, good God, no! Equally as funny is a gentleman by the name of Tom Sanders. I don't know. Oh, go. I hope Tom's making a lot of money on his Facebook, or I should say his YouTube vines, because damn, I would capture this guy to do some type of sitcom because he's fast, he's furious, he's got his teachers involved. The best ones are when he does story time. So just put Tom Sanders, story time, and he looks at story time. And then he zooms up onto a couple and he goes, then these two would go out during the day and strut their stuff. And people look at him and they throw their glasses on, wave their hair and start strutting away. Or the one where he comes up to story time and he runs up. Little did she know that this was when he was about to propose. And she's like, and the guy's like, no. I cannot give either of these two justice. So write this down. Bat Dad, Thomas Sanders, and give yourself a treat. They've got the best of things where you can go 30 minutes and just laugh. With Tom Sanders, the story time stuff is fun, but also just his regular comedy stuff was just amazing. So, matter of fact, I'll probably do some of that. Oh, geez, I gotta get ready for SpringCon. Oop, sorry. Let me put the kayfabe back. That doesn't look right. Oh, well. Did I mention I'm going on vacation next week?
Yes. Yes, you did.
Did I mention it's my 30th anniversary with my beloved wife, Chris?
You did last week, but you can do it again this week.
Cool, because we're going up north. And if I'm lucky, and she's not listening, I'll be able to stop at a few comic stores. So when I come back, I'll have a I heard her just yell no. Anyways, when we come back, I'll probably have hopefully some stories from Comic-Con and hopefully some stuff about what's going up north. Because the one thing about what's fun about having special episodes like we've had the last couple weeks where we get to talk about stuff, but then I also lose track of fun things that I've done. So it's like I want to say, well, what did I do last week that was cool? Because I kind of went on a mini jaunt where I went to a couple of half-price bookstores and I talked about visiting Mind's Eye as they were going out of business. And I might go visit them one more time before they close up shop. I did stop at Toys R Us today. They've moved their discounts 30 to 50%. And kind of browse through, and I'll be damned if they are getting new stuff in. So they must have just a tremendous warehouse somewhere, and they're just moving stuff around. And what's amazing is the different Toys R Us. I think we got 5 in town. I think one of them's already closed up because they started liquidating early. But they all have different things. So you may go to one and see something. I went to another one and they have things. Things that I thought of, well, I'll come back and pick that up. Nope, they're gone. Boy, when they went 30% off, the Transformers were just wiped out. And Corey, are you good with math?
I was told there would be no math.
I'm sorry, I need your help here. What is, let's see, 70% of $80?
Oh, man.
Ah, screw it, I'll get to the calculator. 70
carry the
times
four.
Point, oh, always the four. For $50 at the Maplewood Toys R Us, I can get a replica of Ric Flair's robe.
Ooh.
The red one, sorry, that says Ric Flair on the back. What stopped me from doing it was there is a Macho Man robe with it or next to it. And I couldn't figure out which one to go for. The choices I have to make. Reading wise, and again, I will forgive me if I repeat what I may have talked about over the last couple of podcasts, because I don't know what I've talked about when I have it. Did I mention I picked up a copy of As You Wish, The Inconceivable Tales from the Making of the Princess Bride by Cary Elwes, who played Wesley in the Black Pirate Robert.
Not very on the podcast. You talked about it on your on our trip to the hinterlands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a fun book. You can find it real inexpensive online. If you're a fan of the movie, this is kind of a companion, because I guess he also did a video diary of stuff. And just, you know, we were talking while we were traveling about just the way Andre the Giant was and how he loved being on the movie set because people treated him normal. They weren't staring at him. They weren't pestering him. In fact, a lot of times people ask, are you doing okay? And he's like, I'm doing okay, boss. There's stories about his, you know, no one there could drink him under the table. There was no way it was happening. Matter of fact, there was a story where Cary talks about how apparently Andre drank so much he just passed out in the lobby. And they left him there because there was no way they're going to move that man somewhere else. Just a lot of fun, a lot of behind the tail scenes, which I love. I refound my hardcover Hercules, Prince of Power by Bob Layton. And this has the two miniseries, Hercules, Prince of Power and Hercules, Prince of Power 2 from 82 and 84. And I guess there's a third one that they don't have.
Yeah, they have the graphics.
No.
See,
this is what I'm talking about. We're giving you guys omnibus ideas. Plus, there's all sorts of other Hercules fun stuff you could throw in there. The first Thor Hercules fight, things like that. Dude, we ought to be on commission for these guys. Just, you know, just give us a hey, there you go. Just give us a sample or two samples to review before they come out. That's all we ask. In the meantime, this book was a lot of fun because it takes place in the future. Bob Layton just has a fantastic take for Hercules. He's humorous. He's lusty. He's bold. One of the things, it worked, but in the Marvel Universe, they suddenly decided, okay, Hercules is a buffoon. They decided he's a buffoon. And so every time they looked at him, he was a buffoon. Didn't help that he was fighting villains that only he could see. But that was kind of a real 360. And it worked for the storyline, but it was real sudden, too. This still takes place in the future, whether it's a current one or not. Plus, it has, you know, everybody has to have a chance to fight Galactus, and Hercules has his chance here. I think I did mention this last week, but I did just finish up the Universe X Volumes 1 and 2. And I don't know if this is a series for just you casual fans. There's a lot of minutia in here. For anybody who's a Marvel buff trivia, you get it in Earth X, which I read, and I read Universe X 1 and 2. Some of it's real quick. Like when I first read this, I skipped the last pages where in Earth X, I think it was X-51 talking to the Watcher. And in this one, it's actually Appendix to the Universe written by Jim Krueger, who is...
I know he does a lot of work with Alex Ross.
Yeah, and he's writing it as Aaron Stack. So as you read things like this, There was something I missed the first time around, and this is how minutia goes. They're talking about how apparently in this Marvel universe that a lot of animals died and meat had become scarce. He still feels bad for what happened to Howard.
Oh.
I know. That's amazing. Just the type of trivia. Back in the mainstream universe, I was able to pick up a couple cheap copies of Marvel Visionaries with Peter David, Incredible Hulk 3 and 4. I'm not sure how many of these they actually came out with. I got to look that up. While Corey does his geeking, I'll look that up. But again, this is the Mr. Fix-It era. And what was fun for me is I did not like the Mr. Fix-It era. I went, you know, remember, it went from Todd McFarlane's super hot, super cool art. And then they came back and here he was, a gray Hulk running around like a mobster. And as I read the story, it's very good. Again, Peter David could write the bloody phone book, and I think it would be interesting. And what was fun is these are books that I've never read. Omnibus. And, you know, it would be fun. I'm going to have to go back and dig up his Peter Parker run as well. To round out, last box day, I got copies of Wonder Woman by George Perez, Volume 3. And I'm wondering if this might be, I got to check, this might be the end of it, because he had stopped doing the art, and who was doing the art? Tom Grummett?
Yep, I think he left with either issue 50 or 60, because I remember I was working at Schindler's when his last issue came out, and I had told them it's going to take a nosedive no matter who they put on it.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman sells this many copies. Well, we ought to half the order. The next issue came out, and we had, I think we sold two off the shelf.
I'm just trying to see how long, because this may be it for Wonder Woman. Because, let's see, when did George Perez stop writing it? See, this goes up through 35. No, there must be more, because he keeps writing it. Chris Marine Dent, I think that's how you pronounce it. So, yeah, there's a couple more volumes, I guess, coming, because he hung with it up to issue 62. So I got more coming. I hope it sells well enough, because the stories are fun. And, again, these are stories. I collected this series, but I didn't read it. Or if I did read it, I totally blanked on it. So it's just fun rereading it. And another series which I never collected, but now I am, Avengers Academy Volume 2. The complete collection. This brings us up through issue 20, including, they did a two-part Amazing Spider-Man where they were there, and a Fear Itself home front, and a couple Avengers solos. And Fear Itself for me was kind of a checkout moment, because I started reading it and I checked out. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't care. And if the book crossed over with it, I just didn't pay attention to it. Now that I've read just some of the crossovers with it, I'm thinking, you know, I may have to go back and actually read Fear Itself. So I got a couple things I'll be looking for, either go to Marvel Unlimited or look for a cheap copy. So a lot of good reading. That's pretty much it for now. Like I said, I'm just saving up the money, because as I try to repair the K-Fab here, and I don't know if the tape is not working. I'll try to put it together. But, Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you?
First off, Vince McMahon was never able to repair kayfabe.
No.
So, first thing, I got all caught up on some of the graphic novels that have been by my bed. So, I finally read the fourth volume of Tales of the Beam World that came out, a year ago now?
Yeah. Oh, man. I was, on that, canned ham, you know, we've done that joke once.
I really enjoyed it. I've always liked Tales of the Beam World, but I'm glad he's doing it in big, thick books now rather than 24-page comics. Because with the 24-page comic, the way he tells the story, you don't really get much. And Beam World is such an odd book that you really need to read a lot of it to kind of grasp what he's doing. It's like no other comic that comes out, because he's set up this world, and he set up these rules around this sort of very simple fantasy world, And the stories are around when things in that fantasy world change a little bit, and the characters have to figure out why the change happened, and all of the changes still apply to the rules. And it reminds me a lot of the Isaac Asimov robot stories, where there are the three rules of robotics, and the story is a robot does something that looks like it broke one of the rules of robotics, but the characters figure out, no, these rules are in conflict, or this happened, and the robots are applying those rules to what happened. It's very much, I want to say it's like a puzzle. And he says, you know, and all the publicity for it, it's not a world, it's a process. And as you read it, that you have to keep that in mind, because you're going, what does this have to do with things? It's a unique form of storytelling, and I really, really like that. Another of the omnibuses, I bought this omnibus a couple of years ago, and when I bought it, people were like, why did you spend money on that? Joe, I have read the Just Imagine Stan Lee omnibus.
Omnibi.
And while, boy, it's not good, the art is incredible. And you get John Buscema working on DC characters, which he only did in the Superman, Spider-Man story. And, you know, John Buscema, even though it's not really DC characters, it's John Buscema. It's John Romita. It's, and it's supposedly Stan kind of reimagining all the characters. And while I would have rather had Stan do a Justice League story, it was unique and different enough that I didn't hate it. It's not great. I don't even know if I would call it good, but it was interesting. And with Stan being 95, we're not going to get any more stories out of him. From what I hear, the Spider-Man comic strip is plotted by Roy Thomas, and Stan does dialogue for it. And Stan's had other people plot the Spider-Man comic strip for a long time. But I'm glad I read it. And the art is incredible. They pulled out all the stops for the art. I got caught up on Doctor Strange. I read the entire Jason Aaron run. And I'm getting to the point where any character that comes back, I just say, let Jason Aaron write the first 2 years. just let him write the first 2 years. Because what he did in Doctor Strange is he completely broke the character down, took away all the magic in the world, and then slowly built it back, and in building it back, changed things. Because one of the problems with Doctor Strange that writers have talked about for the last 15 years or so is he was a character who there weren't really any rules for. He could wave his hands and make things go away. And Jason Aaron set up new rules for magic. He kind of explained how magic works in the Marvel Universe. And in doing so, set some limits on Doctor Strange. And it also took away the kind of the pretentious way that Doctor Strange has always been, where, you know, he's the Sorcerer Supreme, so he knows everything, and he speaks in such a way. And Jason Aaron kind of humanized him a bit, which, if he wouldn't have taken away the magic in the first 10 issues, would not have worked for me. But this is a Doctor Strange who kind of had to rebuild himself. And I will say that when the story arc that comes right after that, where he faces Baron Mordo and Satana and Nightmare, it was the best those characters have ever been used. To where Satana, who's the Devil's daughter, I really like that character now. And in the past, it was a character that I could kind of do without, and Marvel killed her once, and no one seemed to give a shit. But now she's a very interesting villain. And have you read those stories, Joe?
Oh, yeah, I read them as they came out.
Okay. You still eat bacon, huh?
I will. I just won't let her shove it down my throat.
The evil bacon story was my favorite story.
Oh,
that was so good.
And what a brilliant way of that. Well, there's a reason we need Doctor Strange down here.
Yes.
And you remember his comment when he, and as you know, this ain't a spoiler, well, it's a spoiler, but you know, he does get away. Remember the last thing he said as he was leaving?
No, what was that?
I think it was, I'm going to leave you a negative Yelp review.
Yes, he was talking about leaving a negative Yelp review. I am a huge fan of Hard Case Crime. I've talked about it relentlessly on the show. And one of my favorite writers who writes for them is Max Allen Collins, who's done a series, and it's like over 12 books now, called Quarry. And Quarry is a hitman. And we don't know his real name. He worked with a broker, and everybody who worked with the broker was given a code name. So all we know about Quarry, name-wise, is his name. Max Collins did a 4-issue miniseries that came out of about a year ago called Quarry's War. And it's an early adventure for Quarry. It also shows his time in Vietnam. But it also kind of weaves in his origin story as well. And as I'm reading it, God damn, Max Collins does great comics. He knows pacing. He knows the form. He's telling three stories at once, and they all weave through. And it's one of those where I was reading it, and I go, damn, I need to read those Quarry books again. Because I didn't read them in order, and I read them kind of as they came out, and I may have missed a few, and now I want to read them all. As well as his Nate Heller books, which is a story of a private detective starting in the 30s with Al Capone, who kind of is part of these historical mysteries up to, I would say up to about the 70s is the last one I've read. Oh, good stuff. And then non-comic wise, I watched last season of Archer in one sitting. Because it's, oh look, Archer's, they've got season 7 on Hulu. I'll start watching it. And I watched the first episode. And while it wasn't, normally Archer has a lot of one-liners that you laugh yourself sick on. This one was funny, but it was much more tightly plotted. And I'm not going to say it was serious, but it was more serious than previous seasons, but it was still really good. And then Danger Island started about 4 weeks ago, so I've been catching up on that as well.
Wait, isn't that the thing from La 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 La?
No.
No? Oh, damn you. You had me there for a minute.
I also got all caught up on the Joel McHale Show with Joel McHale. I don't watch reality TV at all. I had no idea how fucking batshit insane it was till I started watching the Joel McHale Show, because what it is, he takes clips from reality shows and mocks them. And if the shows are like that, I have no comprehension as to why anyone would watch any of this stuff. Wow, it's terrible. But he's very funny, and it's a show on Netflix. They've been doing it every week, and then on July 15th, they're going to drop 6 new episodes. So if you've not watched it, even if you don't watch reality shows, because I don't, it's very funny and well worth your time. And the last thing I am geeking on, Joe, remember how I've been complaining about how DCB Service is shipping the books so very late that it's like, oh, this stuff's 2 weeks old by the time I get it? I went bi-weekly with my shipping, so today was Box Day.
Cool. Which means now we'll have two You Opening Box Days up on YouTube.
Once I get that started, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't done it.
I was all excited. See, I'm still sticking with a month because I got plenty of shit I haven't read yet. So.
Well, I got tired of previews coming to me 2 weeks after it comes out. It's like, great, I have 1 week to read through previews and decide what I want to buy. So, I'm every other week, but hey, I got Star Wars Tag and Bank.
Neat.
If you remember those stories from Dark Horse.
I have the original graphic novel.
And I'm looking forward to reading through that. Well, yep. Believe it or not, kids.
That's a Star Wars fan, and he hated it. One quick housekeeping note, since I asked the question and I found the answer. Apparently, there are 8 volumes of Peter David's Visionary Hulk. It goes all the way up to episode episode. Issue 396, although Peter David's run continues well into the 400s, up to 467. Sounds to me like we need a Peter David Hulk omnibus.
We do a John Byrne omnibus, but it's only six issues.
That's true. Oh, he has his own visionary book, too.
Well, believe it or not, kids.
And I don't.
You have listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
I'm on vacation. Get your own quote. Hit my music. Hulk is on a roll.
Done, bitches!